Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Foster Talk with Dr. John DeGarmo, America's only foster care radio program. Here's your host, Dr. John DeGarmo, one of America's leading experts in foster care.
And welcome to Foster Talk with Dr. John on this Monday night, June the 15th, 2015. I hope your week is going to be a great one, and I hope your weekend was just as pleasant as mine. Last week, I got to spend a much, much needed vacation with my family, and we called in last week from the studios of Disney World. Now we're back here in Georgia at the Fostering Success USA Radio Network, and you are listening to America's Foster Care Radio Show. This is Radio for Foster Care, and I'm your host, Dr. John DeGarmo. So glad you joined us this week. We have a jam-packed show this week. We are going to be speaking to several of the authors of the brand new book, The Kinship Parenting Toolbox, and it is a great, great book. I happened to get a copy myself, and gosh, just can't put it down. There's so much information in that book, and we're going to have some of the authors and the contributors on the show in about 10 minutes from now. Also, you know, this is the month of June, and next week is the National Foster Parent Association, the NFPA Annual Conference, the 2015 conference, starting next Wednesday, going through next Sunday. We're going to hear some about that in this week's installment of the NFPA News and Notes. We have our Foster Care Hero of the Week. We have some news, and we have our Foster Care Question of the Week as well. In fact, we do that every single Monday, don't we, on my Facebook page. You can go to my Facebook page right now. Don't turn the radio off. Just flip over on your online device there. Go to my Facebook page, Dr. John DeGarmo, Foster Care Expert. This week's question, what has been the biggest challenge to you as a foster parent? We're going to read some of your responses on the air. So if you want, you can go to that site right now, to that page right now, and put down your response, and just maybe we will read your response here on the air. But right now we go to our very, very busy news desk, and we go first of all to Alaska. Where new regulations are coming for a federal law created to keep Alaska Native and American Indian children in foster care within their family and within their tribes. Now, tribal sovereignty experts say the changes could have major implications for foster care in the state of Alaska. The Indian Child Welfare Act is a federal act that has been a constant source of contention and legal battle since it was passed in 1978. During the second day of presentation on tribal justice at the Kowarik Rural Providers Conference in Nome, Alaska, John Bioff with Karabik's Tribal Court Office outlined these changes, revealed in March, which he said would be felt nationwide. And he says there have been gaps and confusions and some bad case laws that have been made since the ICWA law was enacted. And I think the new laws are a positive development that seek to add a lot of clarification to the older laws in areas that have been problematic in Alaska. Now, with a vast majority of tribal cases in the Bering Strait and Norton Sound region in Alaska relating to child protection, the new regulations should clarify what rules are for transferring a case to tribal court. Bio says the regulations spell out what are grounds to deny a transfer to a tribal court. For instance, how long has a case in the state court is not a legitimate grounds to deny a transfer. Now, you know, I have been, I've worked in Minnesota and Wisconsin the past few months this year, and they have some interesting tribal laws as well. If you do not live in a state that has these tribal laws, then it is a very different form of foster care. And we've talked about it here in the program in the past. So it's interesting to see how Alaska is going to move on with what they're doing there. Okay, we go to Texas, where an alarming number of deaths of children in foster care last year, 2014, sparked legislative change this session. But watchdogs argue that those measures don't go far enough. In Texas, there are 17,000 children in the state in the foster care system. An interim House committee met this year over the case of 10 children who died from abuse or neglect in the fiscal year 2013, up from 2 deaths in the previous year. In 2014, 3 children died in foster care. The committee, the Texas committee, offered recommendations to the legislature after it found that inadequate resources and a limited number of workers were affecting how much time each worker could spend with a child. Lawmakers, though, fell short when it came to finding ways to reduce caseloads for Child Protective Service caseworkers that could give them necessary one-on-one time with children. House Bill 993, authored by Representative Armando Wall, a Democrat from Houston, would have directed the Department of Family and Protective Services to work toward ensuring that the average load for caseworkers does not exceed a prescribed target. Despite the loose language of the bill, it fell short because of the price tag attached to adding more caseworkers. There's no will to expend the money, some say. That's why it makes me even angrier, according to Wall, because we had the money to do it. Wow, that is rough. No money there. You know, you probably know that today's caseworkers are overworked, overwhelmed, under-resourced, and underpaid. There are simply not enough caseworkers in today's society when it comes to foster care. They are simply overworked. Too many children on their caseload and not enough foster parents. So it's very easy to see how Texas is having a problem with that. Now we go to California. Los Angeles, as a matter of fact, where a new stream of state funds intended to provide greater educational equity for at-risk students in Los Angeles is largely going for other purposes, a study released Monday. Let me say that again. A new stream of state funds intended to provide greater educational equity for at-risk students in LA, Los Angeles, is going for other purposes. The study by the University of California, Berkeley, researchers looked at an implementation of the new local control funding formula by the Los Angeles Unified State District. It found that most of those dollars seeped into the district state budget, largely to offset special education costs. Priority was placed on restoring staff positions, a decision that researchers found somewhat reasonable given the deep budget cuts schools endured during the recession. Still, the first full year of implementation has been dedicated largely to rebuilding the status quo rather than devising a new strategy, the study found. So quite simply, the money that has been designated for children at risk, basically children in foster care, in Los Angeles is not going to where it should. Problem there in Los Angeles. And that's not something that's happening simply in California. It is something that happens nationwide. We go to Florida for a very, very odd report. Have you seen this report? I couldn't believe my eyes. I had to research this a few times to determine that it is quite simply factual. It is. Very strange. From Florida. Two Florida parents charged with felony neglect in April for leaving their 11-year-old son outside their house for 90 minutes. Got their children back after they spent a month in foster care, but the family's court case remains in limbo. The parents late last week reviewed their case documents following a court appearance. At the appearance, a judge told the family lawyer that they are to work with the prosecutor to reach a mutual agreement and to return to court by the end of June. The parents have come forward because they believe a charge is widely overblown and a classic example of government overreach resulting in harm. They said in an interview that they could not get home in time to let their son into the house. And not having a key, he played basketball outside the house for an hour and a half while he waited for them. A neighbor looked out the window, called the police, and Child Protective Services got involved. The boy and his 4-year-old brother were taken into custody while the parents were arrested and held overnight in jail. The kids were placed with foster parents for a month before the older son was able to just tell the judge he wanted to go back with his parents. The judge acquiesced, but it remains unclear if the parents will suffer further consequences. As a parent myself, my children play outside. When I left today, my son was playing basketball outside. Now, granted, my wife was inside, but what a very, very strange story. Okay, let's have some good news, shall we? Here is our good news of the week. We go to Nebraska, where the University of Nebraska Associate Professor's research tracks children as they transition out of foster care. Tracking the struggles, missteps, and self-determined successes of youth known only by numbers to protect their identities, Alexandra Trout, a University of Nebraska associate professor, knows the heartbreaking realities of the 500,000 kids in foster care in the U.S. They often come into the system carrying only a handful of clothes and a trash bag. We've documented that here many, many times. So she wanted to do something about it. She didn't have the answers until she heard from Rose Griffiths, a senior lecturer at England's University of Leicester and a former math teacher who started a simple program of mailing books to foster kids in hopes of improving their math skills. Once a month for 6 months a year, children in foster care received a care package from Griffith's Letterbox Club. Inside are books, activities, stationery, stickers, and a letter addressed to the child by name. The packages did more than make math appealing. They let kids in foster care know they had not disappeared from the face of the earth. Someone knew where they were and were cared enough to send them a package. So Alexandra Trout decided, hey, she wanted to do something just like that. So she has gathered together some people, some of her students, and once a month, February through July, students gather stuff, bright blue letterbox club envelopes with books, with games, with art supplies, fun trinkets that all kids love. And children in her area are now receiving not only that package, but they're receiving a handwritten letter from one of her students to the child, as well as a sheet of stickers personalized with a child's name, which say property of, or this book belongs to, etc., etc., etc. Trout says it gives the kids something they can visibly declare their own, and it's a luxury few kids in foster care have. Wow. Wow. That is incredible. Trout estimates letterbox club packets cost about $200 per child per mailing, and she said her and her students are on the constant lookout for cool gifts at low cost. Hey, I am going to put our hats off this week. Our hats are off this week to Alexandra Trout and the University of Nebraska-Lincoln as our foster care hero of the week. If you are not a foster parent, but you're an advocate and you want to help kids in need, this is a great way to help children in need. Okay, we have to take a commercial break. But when we come back, we are going to have some of the authors of the brand new book, The Kinship Parenting Toolbox. They're going to be appearing on our show. The number to call in is 347-324-5140. Once again, 347-324-5140. We'll take your phone calls. Also coming up, the NFPA News and Notes, and of course, our Foster Care Question of the Week as well. You are listening to America's Foster Care Radio Program on the Fostering Success USA Radio Network. We'll be back right after these messages.
And now back to Dr. John DeGarmo. You're listening to Foster Talk with Dr. John DeGarmo, America's only foster care radio program. Now there is a book available for children coming into foster care. The book is called A Different Home, A New Foster Child Story. Written in simple language and fully illustrated in color, this storybook is designed to help children in care or moving into care to settle in and answer some of their sensitive questions. Accompanied by notes for adults on how to use the story with children, it will be a useful book for foster parents and caseworkers, as well as social workers, teachers, and anyone else working with children in foster care. A Different Home, A New Foster Child Story, available at Amazon and where all books are sold.
Welcome to the award-winning Fostering Families Today magazine. Foster parents are called to give their hearts, share their homes, and make a difference in the life of a child. The journey is difficult and filled with heartbreak and loss, but also joys and inspiration as they see the children in their care make small changes or large accomplishments. Fostering Families Today has been ministering to the hearts of those families for 15 years, celebrating the joys, educating for the future, and sharing in the bumps and bruises of the fostering journey. It's more than a magazine. It's a training tool, a therapeutic intervention, and a friend to lean on. Let Fostering Families Today be part of your journey. Find us on the internet at www.adoptinfo.net or call for additional information toll-free at 888-924-6736.
Greetings. My name is Daniel Heimpel, and I'm the publisher of The Chronicle of Social Change. an online news site covering child welfare and juvenile justice. Be sure to check out our money and business section, which includes a huge database of youth services funding opportunities from private foundations and all levels of government. Thanks for taking a look at ChronicleOfSocialChange.org.
And now back to Dr. John DeGarmo with Foster Talk. And now back to Dr. John DeGarmo with Foster Talk.
And we're back with Foster Talk with Dr. John on the Fostering Success USA Radio Network. We have with us some of the editors of the brand new book, The Kinship Parenting Toolbox. In fact, we have with us Kim Hansel, who's the editor of, gosh, a whole bunch of stuff, the Fostering Family Today magazine, the Adoption magazine, the Foster Parenting Toolbox book, goes on and on and on. And we also have with us Jan Wagner. Jan and Kim, welcome to the program this week.
Thanks so much, John.
And Jan, are you there too?
Can you hear me, John?
I can. Can you hear me?
Okay, good, because we were trying a different number and never got through, and I didn't know whether you'd hear me now or not. I'm glad you can.
Thank you for joining us this week. Now, Kim, this is a huge, huge book, and this is not the first time you have undertaken this book, but this book is something that is a lot different than your normal, typical foster care book. To begin with, it deals with something that I know is very, very special to your heart, and that is kinship. And what else is very different about it is you've taken a lot of different collaborators from across the United States, their stories, their messages, their expertise, and you've combined it in one book. In fact, Jan, I believe, has, lots of articles in the book. Kim, how did this book come to fruition?
The book started before we were even done with the Foster Parenting Toolbox. Everyone was saying, after you get finished with this book, you really need to tackle the subject of kinship care. And for me personally, I have watched my own mother-in-law and my father-in-law, who's now deceased, raise two nephews. And I really watched the challenges that they went through, the struggles they had, how, it was difficult to find money to get them a haircut some days, just the little things that if they would have had more supports in place, I know there would have been better outcomes for them and for the boys. And I really felt strongly that this book needed to be out there for people like my in-laws so that they could find the resources and read the stories of other people who've walked the same path and hopefully get some support and some guidance on their journey.
So why, let me rephrase the question. Was it difficult, Kim, combining all of these authors into one book?
Working in foster care for a really long time, it was difficult moving into the kinship community because it's a whole different group of people and demographics. And for foster parents, they want to talk about the stories because they feel really good about the kids they're taking care of, and it's easy for them to talk about, the drug abuse that the birth parents may be going through or some of the struggles that the birth parents are having being homeless and whatever. But when we're talking about kinship parents, that means it's a mother talking about her daughter struggling with drug abuse or her son being homeless. And those are really difficult and hard things to talk about, not only with your family, but to open that up for society as a whole, to hear that we're not perfect. And there's times when grandparents or aunts and uncles have to step in and take care of these kids. And so that was probably the biggest challenge of this book, was getting folks to open up and to talk about some of these challenges that they face, because it is so very, very personal.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, Jan, you have been an incredible advocate for foster children in the state of Michigan, the Great Lakes State, my hometown. Jan, what brought you to this book? And tell us a little bit about some of the stories you shared in the book.
Well, what brought me to the book was I think that on Facebook or on a couple of the different sites, Kim was asking for contributors
people
right.
that were willing to share their stories. We were in the process of adopting our grandson. And once that adoption was final and everything, it was easier for me to become a little more transparent. I didn't have to worry about, oh, somebody's going to hear this and maybe report me, when we didn't have, you know, we were outside the system to begin with. And we didn't need that system involvement at the very end of our journey. So my transparency was... I've always been kind of the person that you see what you get. And so I talked about it. And it's hard. And sometimes you cry through it. And sometimes you are angry through it. But it's a story that I want other families to know they're not alone in. And I don't want these families to think that they need to take the blame, that it was their fault.
Right. Right, absolutely. We also have on the line with us Alice Caliendo from Las Vegas. Now, Allison, you are the director of Foster Kinship, a 501c3 that provides support and advocacy and case management for kinship caregivers in Southern Nevada. How did you get involved in that, and what led you to do that?
Well, thank you for having me. I started Foster Kinship 4 years ago, when I was working with children in foster care as a counselor, and all the children I was working with were placed with relative caregivers. And these relatives were, number one, incredible people, and then they had a lot of questions which I figured would be simple to answer. Once I started digging into sort of how kinship is different from foster care, I realized there was a whole gap of services and information that was really not fair to the kids in kinship care versus foster care. So I just really got stuck and hooked on it, and I haven't looked back since.
So why, Allison, why is kinship care particularly important to you? I understand that you just adopted a child, right? Now, was that child was that child from the foster care system, or was that more of a kinship?
Well, it was a foster care system adoption, and we are not related. We're not related to the child. So we're foster parents. And I understand the importance that foster parents bring, but I also know how much resources we have available to us. And I strongly believe that when kids can't be with their parents, they should be with their family. And then when that can't happen, you know, it's people who can step up as foster parents. It's so crucial. But I believe that when kids can stay with their family, that is such a good thing for the children, and I just really want to support that.
Yeah, absolutely. Jan, what do you think about that? The children, if possible, staying with their children. Staying with their family.
Well, you would have to go with the fact that this works for us. This works for my grandson. It keeps him right here with aunts, uncles, cousins, and everyone else. The other fact is there was a history for him. There wasn't as much of a trauma transition. There was still a trauma because he was still separated from his mother. But he didn't go through that stranger feeling or that having to get used to different ways of different families or different siblings or anything like that. And I do, but I think that the drawback is that when you become a foster parent, you're prepared. You make a conscious decision to become a foster parent. You prepare for it, you wait for it, you train for it. You have all this support in place, and then comes the child. When you become a kinship parent, I kind of like to look at it as the unexpected parent, because it happens overnight most times.
Right.
It happens
right.
anytime. So there isn't that training. There isn't that preparation. And it's way different parenting my grandson than it was my first three adult children.
Why is that, Jan? Why is that?
I think he comes with more baggage. I think that he went through experiences that, of course, my biological kids didn't go through, much the same experiences that the kids have gone through that are in traditional foster care.
Right.
And I think that there's so many more things out there. There's so much different. School is different. Oh, my gosh, this is terrible, learning to do Common Core. And the technology these kids have, but the basic crux of it is I can learn all of that, but the dealing with the emotional trauma, the developmental delays, things like that, that's massive. And kinship parents really need help and support with that, and they don't have it.
No, they surely don't. They surely don't. You're listening to Foster Talk with Dr. John, America's foster care radio show. Now, Kim, there is not really that much information out there about kinship parenting. When I travel across the U.S. and I train foster parents, I do come across many kinship parents, and they tell me, hey, we're not getting the resources. We're not getting the information that we need. Why do you think that is, Kim?
I think a lot of, well, there's formal and informal kinship caregivers, and a lot of times it just happens informally, very much like what it did with my in-laws. My brother-in-law couldn't take care of the kids. He dropped them off at mom and dad's one day, and that's where they stayed. They never called the system. They never got anybody involved, so there were really no resources for them to reach out to. And I think that's probably one of the biggest reasons why. And I do feel like maybe there's some of that shame involved with not wanting to talk about the family secrets and whatever that makes them not want to stand up and say, we deserve these resources. We have a right to have resources to help the kids that we're caring for. And I mean, I have to give, well, both Allison and Jan credit, because they really are standing up and asking for these services and trying to help these families as much as possible. And I think it's super, super important that we raise that kind of awareness. And that's really why we put the book together, because we felt like there really wasn't anything out there for kinship caregivers. There really hasn't been for a long time. And we wanted to speak to their needs, because we understand it's a growing just a growing movement, a growing happening. Statistically, there's more than 5.8 million American children who live with grandparents, and another 2 million who live with other relatives, according to the 2010 census, and I'm sure that those numbers are only getting larger. So it's really a big group, and they really do deserve the services that any other children get.
Right, right. Allison, Kim touched on something that's interesting there, that it is growing. It is growing. Why do you think kinship care is growing? And is there some type of national policy that could be implemented?
Well, so I think it's growing for a few reasons. One is, in terms of the foster care system, it's really the way kids are going to be placed going forward. So the mandate is that kids are placed with family first. So you're going to see in foster care more relative placements. But in terms of just in general, the informal placements where are done without outside of the system, those are growing because of several reasons. But most, I think, critically, the economy in the last several years has been really hard on a lot of people. And if there was sort of a weakness to start with, you might see that children need a little bit more help from their parents right now. And so that's one reason that we sort of see in the research is why this is growing. And the reasons have always been sort of similar as to why kinship care is necessary. And I don't know if it was touched on already, but a death of a parent, addiction. We've got a lot of incarceration here in Las Vegas, at least. Most of our families are dealing with addiction or incarceration or something like that. And the grandparents or the other relatives are the most stable people in the kid's life. But I do think that the economy has made things difficult, and then coupled with the fact that this is just the way things are moving forward in terms of foster care and policy, you're going to continue to see relatives be looked to as the first placement. As far as policies are concerned, we need to, at least from a foster care perspective, make sure that our relative placements are treated the same as our foster care placements. Jan touched on it a little bit about the less training, less preparation. A lot of times there's less money available, less information. And so we need to be providing that to our kinship placements at the start, because they're already a little bit behind compared to foster parents who've had months of training prior to placement.
Right.
As far as the informal placements, I'd like to see across the 50 states that we have stronger child-only TANFs and guardianship supports, because those are what informal families are relying on. And so we need to see that child-only TANF is increased and not looked at based on the family's income in some states and make sure that these families have access to resources. Right now, informal families have the hardest time getting resources.
Right, right. You're listening to America's Foster Talk with Dr. John. Now, Allison, Jan, and Kim, we have to take a quick commercial break. But when we come back, I've got a few more questions for you, okay?
We're ready.
All right, great. All right, we'll be back right after these messages. Also coming up, we have the NFPA News and Notes and our Foster Care Question of the Week. All that and a whole lot more. You're listening to America's Foster Talk with Dr. John.
You're listening to Foster Talk with Dr. John DeGarmo, America's only foster care radio program. Did you ever wish there was a manual for foster parents? Well, now there is. This manual is a comprehensive guide offering proven, friendly advice for novice and experienced parents alike. Distilling many years' experience into one book, U.S. foster and adoptive parent John DeGarmo combines his own hard-won wisdom with that of fellow foster parents. He describes what to expect from the process, how to access help and support, and how to ensure the best care for your child. The Foster Parenting Manual, available now in stores and at Amazon.com.
Hey, friends, I've got to be honest with you. There are those days when I feel drained, I feel exhausted, and I feel worn out. There are days when I just need some inspiration. That's why I wrote my brand new Kindle edition ebook, available only on Amazon.com. This is part of the Foster Parenting 101 series that has been so popular with you. This one is entitled Inspirational Verse and Poems for Foster Parents. Now, this is an ebook filled with inspirational quotes and poems for today's foster parents, today's social workers, and today's child advocates. It is designed to encourage and inspire you, and I have collected some of the most encouraging verses for those who care for children in need. This is one special ebook that you cannot be without. Foster Parenting 101, Inspirational Verse and Poems for Foster Parents, available only on Amazon.com.
Did you know there are more than 400,000 children in foster care? Foster, adoptive, and kinship caregivers stand in the gap for these children, and they need support too. The National Foster Parent Association has been the voice of foster, adoptive, and kinship caregivers for more than 40 years, advocating for thousands of families who open their heart and homes to children in need. Learn more about NFPA at www.nfpaonline.org or call 1-800-557-5238.
And now back to Dr. John DeGarmo with Foster Talk.
And we're back with Foster Talk with Dr. John and the Fostering Success USA Radio Network. This is your host, Dr. John DeGarmo, on this June 15, 2015. And we have a number of the authors, if you will, the collaborators of the brand new book, The Kinship Parenting Toolbox. Now, Jan, as a foster parent myself, when I went through training 14 years ago, I had to go through a lot of training, a lot of hoops. Oh, goodness, a lot of paperwork, you name it. And today's foster parents, they really, really try to screen them to make sure that the best possible placement, because we don't want to have those children placed into those foster parents who are doing it for the wrong reason. And you know, Jan, we've seen story after story of foster parents gone bad. How is there screening for kinship parents?
I didn't have one.
Oh, okay.
I had my grandson with me for 6 years before anybody ever looked at our home or looked at our background or looked at our family life or anything else. We went to court and got our own guardianship after we'd had him 6 months, and we just had to file a report on the condition of the minor once a year. It was just a written paper we turned in. And then when we filed for adoption, wow, everything was opened up. We had also, at that point, obtain our foster parent license in hopes that we could adopt him and obtain a subsidy, a medical subsidy, for some of his future emotional needs. But we weren't able to. But that scrutiny didn't take place until my grandson was in our home for 5 years.
Well,
from 18 months until 6.
Well, let me ask you, as Allison or Kim, maybe one of you can chime in. You know, I get concerned, as a foster parent, I get concerned sometimes when the children leave my home and are returned to a biological family member, and I know in my heart that it's not the right time, it's a bad placement, that the child is, that the family members are not ready to receive that child back in their home. And sometimes those children are returning back to a bad situation. Is there any type of screening today to make sure these children are not placed in with a, you know, with a dangerous environment with an aunt, uncle, or grandparent, or whatever it may be?
Well, this is Allison, and it depends on at what level and when the child welfare agency is involved with the child. So in Jan's case, you know, they received guardianship outside the system, and that's the majority of kinship families. They're going to be doing it in an informal way, and there's really no oversight in that process. However, in my experience, and I've worked with maybe 500 families by this time, the majority of families that step up are doing so and are able to do it and are good, solid placements for the children. Once CPS or the child welfare agency is involved, there is a much more rigorous screening process before they're placed with a relative. And even if they're moved from a foster family to a relative placement, that relative placement still has to undergo a background check and a home safety visit and those sort of things that you'd expect from all foster parents. So it just sort of depends if child welfare is involved or not.
Right. Okay. Now, Kim, for
Jen,
somebody who...
could I...
Yeah, please, Jen,
I was just going to interject there with what Allison said, and I don't have any objections. I think any family, relatives or foster care families or anything, I think it's very important there is that background screening when that child comes in. I really do, and that's one of my sticking points, is that I still think, even if I'm going to do this informally, that there's nothing wrong with investigating the family where the child is.
Well, hopefully the family members would agree with you because they want to make sure the child is placed in the safest environment possible. Yeah, absolutely. Now, Kim, for those people who are curious about this book, what does this book have to offer?
It offers a wealth of information for people. It has stories from people like Jan who've been there, done that, walked this path, are continuing to walk the path. We have more expert articles like from Allison about everything from legalities in kinship caregiving to getting financial resources, legal resources. And then we have some really nice pieces on understanding what children from traumatic backgrounds, what they bring with them, things that, parenting is a little bit different for kids who've had tough experiences in their early childhood. And a lot of times these kinship caregivers just don't understand that those impacts are there because they raise their biological children from day one and they never had those experiences or those challenges. So there's definitely some behavior and discipline things that need to be discussed. And then also another is working with the schools, getting IEPs in place and other services. I know Jan has walked that path with getting her grandson services. So those are all things that we tried to touch on in the book so people could take those things away and hopefully reach out to some of those resources that they need and also understand that they're not alone on this path.
Oh, absolutely. That sounds great. Kim, how can people get hold of the book?
You can visit emkpress.com or you can find it on Amazon. It's in both places.
All right. And Kim and Jan and Allison, I want to thank you so very, very much for taking time out of your busy schedule and telling us about the importance of kinship care and your own experience with it and discussing the book as well. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
And I encourage everybody listening to grab the book. Even if you are a foster parent, you're not a kinship parent, but you're a foster parent, this book will provide a lot of valuable insight for you and how to be a better foster parent. You know, I'm not a kinship parent. I'm not a kinship parent, and I hope that I never have to do it. But I love this book. It is a fantastic resource, and it's something that I value myself as a foster parent because I learn a lot from it. So make sure you pick up this great, great book. Okay, when we come back, we're going to have the NFPA news and notes, and we also have our foster care question of the week. You're listening to America's Foster Care Radio Program on the Foster... Fostering Success USA Radio Network. This is Foster Talk with Dr. John. We'll be back after these messages.
You're listening to Foster Talk with Dr. John DeGarmo, America's only foster care radio program. An insightful, interesting new book called Fostering Love, available at Amazon or where you buy books. John DeGarmo learns that to follow God's call in his life means to take up his cross in his own home. This book is a true life account of his experience as a foster parent, along with his wife and their own three children, as he followed God's call to take foster children into his home. This is a story of heartbreak, sadness, and ultimate love as he comes to find God in the tears and smiles of many foster children. Fostering Love by Dr. John DeGarmo.
Hi, this is Christian Molesky, owner, editor, and creator of Foster Focus magazine, the only monthly foster care magazine in America. You're listening to Foster Talk with Dr. John DeGarmo. Enjoy and visit fosterfocusmag.com.
And now back to Dr. John DeGarmo with Foster Talk.
And we're back with America's Foster Care Radio Show on the Fostering Success USA Radio Network. I'm your host, Dr. John DeGarmo, with Foster Talk with Dr. John on this Monday night, June the 15th, 2015. And that means next week I will be in Virginia with foster parents, social workers, kinship parents, caseworkers, foster children advocates, CASA volunteers, you name it, from all across the nation at the National Foster Parent Association's annual conference. And with us on the phone is Karen Poteet, a member of the NFPA. Karen, welcome to the program this week.
Well, thank you, Dr. DeGarmo. I'm glad to be with you.
Now, Karen, where are you calling from? What state are you calling from?
I live in the state of Oklahoma.
Now, will you be traveling all the way across the country to Virginia next week?
I will be there, yes, and I'm looking forward to our annual conference in beautiful Norfolk, Virginia.
It is a beautiful part of the state. Now, Karen, before we get into the conference, tell us a little bit about your own experience in foster care as a foster parent.
Well, my husband and I were foster parents when we lived in the state of Illinois, and two sisters that were placed with us, we were able to become a forever family for them, and so we finalized our adoption in 2001.
Oh, great, great. Now, how long have you been associated with the NFPA?
I've been on the board of directors for the Foster Care and Adoptive Association of Oklahoma since 2004, but then became involved at the national level with the NFPA probably for about the last 3 years.
Okay, and what is your involvement with the NFPA?
Well, I'm on the board of directors of the NFPA, and in fact, chair the program committee for the association.
Okay, so tell us, what are some of your roles or responsibilities as on the program chair?
Well, the program chair has the policy committee, or under that auspices of the program aspect, the policy committee, diversity committee. That deals with such issues as kinship care, issues that deal with ICWA, Indian Child Welfare Act, issues that deal with any type of diversity comes under the auspices of that committee as well. So there's a lot of work that's done. You know, and I mentioned kinship, children, like biological children of foster families that are, you know, siblings to the children who are in foster care in the home.
Now, what are some of the issues facing foster care today that the NFPA is looking at?
Well, you know, I mentioned ICWA.
You're right.
And that's a huge national issue. So, you know, we certainly have a policy position on that topic. Kinship care is a huge issue nationwide. So we're really trying to kind of keep on the forefront of a lot of, you know, these major issues that
are really
crucial in the field of child welfare.
Absolutely, absolutely. So those people who are going to the National Foster Parent Association's annual conference next week and have never been before, what can they expect?
Well, I think one of the most wonderful things is to be with your peers. And, you know, I've thought for years that foster parenting is somewhat of an isolating profession in that you don't have, like, if you go to work outside of your home every day and you're around your peer group, but in foster parenting, you have to reach out more to your peers, to associate with your peers. And so that's one of the wonderful things I think about coming together in this national conference is that peer association and learning from one another as peers, and then also having professionals from the arena of child welfare and from the judicial community that are present to talk about some of these national issues and challenges. And I think one comes away with being revitalized and with a broader understanding of how complex a lot of the issues are that we deal with.
You know, I can't agree more about coming away revitalized. As I travel across the country training foster parents, I really enjoy the part where I get to talk to my fellow foster parents because I love listening to their stories because I'm inspired by them. I come back feeling I have more energy, I'm inspired. You know, many times the stories are heartbreaking, but I know that somebody else is going through the same exact thing I am.
Exactly.
Challenges, the same difficulties, and you know, the same joys as well. And no one really understands a foster parent like another foster parent.
I couldn't agree more. That is exactly right.
So what can you tell us a little bit about the agenda for the conference?
We're going to have a Brain Research Academy on the first day that kind of will set the stage for the rest of the conference. And then Friday through Sunday, there will be a number of sessions that deal with topics such as advocacy, health, all of the systems that we work in as foster parents, because we deal with a lot of systems, things about education, nutrition, trauma, just a variety of issues.
Oh, now, there are lots and lots of seminars going on. In fact, I'm doing a seminar Friday and a seminar Saturday. Now, are there other activities that foster parents can engage in besides all of these training sessions?
Certainly. In fact, there's the opportunity to go to a picnic and a baseball game. There actually is going to be a walk on the waterfront of Norfolk, a fundraiser walk called Walk Me Home. There even is the opportunity for families, if they pre-register for this and have children that they bring with them, to have them involved in a camp while the sessions are going on. So I think there are a lot of opportunities. There are exhibitors that will be there. So there's a lot of activities occurring.
These walks are pretty impressive. They do a great service. Can you tell us about the walk for those people who have no idea what it is?
Well, the participants in the walk seek sponsors to sponsor them for the walk, and so that's how the funds are raised. And then the funds generated then come back to the National Foster Parent Association to help fund additional support for working with, you know, our kinship foster parents and adoptive parents all over the nation.
Right, absolutely. And the conference is Wednesday through Sunday, is that right?
Actually, that is correct.
It kicks off Wednesday, and Wednesday is, if I remember correctly, Wednesday is the big board meeting, is that right?
That is correct. And the sessions actually start Thursday, so it runs Thursday, June 25th through Sunday, June 28th.
And now, those people who are not board members, can they attend a meeting Wednesday if they're in the area?
They can. Our board meetings are open to the public, so they're more than welcome to come and attend.
That is great. That is great. Well, Karen, thank you so much for being part of the program. I hoped to see you and meet with you next week sometime.
Okay. Well, I look forward to it. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. That was Karen Poteet with the National Foster Parent Association and this week's NFPA News and Notes. And next week is their big, big conference. Okay, we got to take a commercial break, but when we come back, we're going to have our foster care question of the week. You're listening to America's Foster Care Radio Program on the Fostering Success USA Radio Network.
You're listening to Foster Talk with Dr. John DeGarmo, America's only foster care radio program. Now there is a book available for children coming into foster care. The book is called A Different Home, A New Foster Child Story. Written in simple language and fully illustrated in color, this storybook is designed to help children in care or moving into care to settle in and answer some of their sensitive questions. Accompanied by notes for adults on how to use the story with children, it will be a useful book for foster parents and caseworkers, as well as social workers, teachers, and anyone else working with children in foster care. A Different Home, A New Foster Child Story, available at Amazon and where all books are sold.
Did you know there are more than 400,000 children in foster care? Foster, adoptive, and kinship caregivers stand in the gap for these children, and they need support too. The National Foster Parent Association has been the voice of foster, adoptive, and kinship caregivers for more than 40 years, advocating for thousands of families who open their heart and homes to children in need. Learn more about NFPA at www.nfpaonline.org or call 1-800-557-5238.
And now back to Dr. John DeGarmo with Foster Talk.
And we're back with Foster Talk with Dr. John on the Fostering Success USA Radio Network. In just a moment, we'll have our foster care question of the week. But first, we go to back to our phones, and I think this might be Jan Wagner still on the phone. Is this you, Jan?
I'm right here.
So, Jan, will you be at the NFPA conference this coming up next week?
No, I won't. And I'm really disappointed that I won't be able to, but some things had come up and I'm not going to make it. I did go last year and it was excellent.
Right. It was excellent. Tell us some of the things that are going on in Michigan's foster care system.
Well, right now, and of course I do most of my focus on kinship work, and we have formed a Michigan statewide kinship coalition. And we are working on some advocacy. We are also working to have September declared Kinship Care Month in the state of Michigan so that we can start getting that word out and having people use it and become more familiar with who kinship care families are and what they represent and some of the needs that they have.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, thank you, Jan, so much for being part of our program this evening. And looking forward to hearing how that goes and for the proposal for September. Will you please keep us updated on that?
Sure will.
All right.
There's
All right.
a national movement going as well with that. They're working on having a presidential proclamation at the same time. And we're trying to encourage states to do an individual state proclamation.
Oh, that's good to hear. Well, Jan, I'm going to count on you to call in the program when that thing gets rolling closer.
Will do.
Great. Thank you. Okay, let's go to our foster care question of the week. And this week's question asks, what has been the biggest challenge to you as a foster parent? We're going to look at some of your responses right now. Tish says, the roller coaster when a child's plan is changed multiple times and going on, this child has been in care nearly 3 years and we still haven't gotten to termination. Lynn says, when the system functions solely on rules and not on what is in the best interest of the child. For example, sibling visits that don't happen because there isn't an open case on one sibling. Extended family contact is forbidden because the parent is in jail and visits are suspended. Kids have to stay in a shelter because it takes over a week to schedule the transfer to a willing foster home and things like that. Kat says, child being reunited. It's bittersweet, but it is heartbreaking. You know, Kat, it really is both those. Sometimes we can rejoice in the fact that the family is back together, but as foster parents, hey, we grieve, don't we? Because it hurts. It's like losing a family member. Our foster care question of the week this week, what has been the biggest challenge to you as a foster parent? Melanie says, advocating for the services the children desperately need but still have not received has been the most frustrating. She goes on to say, Welcoming new children and readjusting to a new normal over the period of several months is the most challenging. Cindy says getting case details so we know what we are dealing with. Cindy, that's exactly right. That's why I write in my book, The Foster Parenting Manual, that it is so important to have a list of questions every time that phone rings about a new placement, so you can have those questions, so you can get those case details, as you pointed out. Sometimes we can't get them, but, you know, the squeaky wheel sometimes works. The more questions we ask, hopefully the more information we'll get, right? Jamie says, balancing life and the expectations of foster care. I have two children by birth, and with end-of-the-year field trips and recitals, trying to juggle that and visitations can be very difficult. Doing visitations on Saturdays and providing the transportation when that is our family fun, only family day and the only day I see my husband and kids. Finding time and energy for housework and cooking with four kids, visits that are an hour and a half drive one way, and the needs of a kiddo with autism, the needs of birth parents that seem to be more important than the needs of the children. Wow, how about that? I agree. And Alex says, dealing with DSS, or the Department of Social Services, which is his child welfare system. Those are just some of the responses this week on our foster care question of the week. You can find more responses, and you can add your response as well. Just go to Facebook, go to Dr. John DeGarmo, Foster Care Expert, and we do it every single Monday morning, and you can find them there. Hey, on that Facebook page tomorrow, we're going to have our brand new Foster Care 101, the video of the week. This week, I'm going to look at bringing laughter to your child in foster care. Sometimes our kids come to our home. These kids from foster care come to our home and they don't know how to smile. They don't know how to laugh. They've been through so much trauma. They've been through so much abuse. They've been through so much pain that they really have nothing to laugh about or nothing to smile about. Well, we're going to focus on that. You can find it on my Facebook page tomorrow. You can find it on Twitter. You can find it on LinkedIn. You can find it on my website. Speaking of my website, just Google Dr. John DeGarmo Foster Care, and you're going to see a brand newly redesigned website. I spent some time over the weekend working for you. I spent some time trying to redesign the website so that it's easier to read for you, and I hope that you find it easier to read. Okay, I'm going to be in Pennsylvania this week. Next week, I'm going to be in Virginia and working on some plans right now to visit Oklahoma and New Hampshire and just some of the states coming up in the next couple of months. If I'm in your neck of the woods, I hope that I see you there too. Coming out next month, I just got the confirmation today, July 21st, next month, my brand new book comes out, Helping Foster Children in School. Listen, if you are a foster parent, you need this book. Not only do you need this book in your home, you need this book at your child's school. Because I'm a teacher. I'm here to tell you that teachers and school administrators and school employees, they don't know how to work with your child in foster care. They don't know anything about the foster care system. And frankly, they don't have the time to really sit down and learn about it. This is what this book is for. It's for you. For the teachers, for the social workers. So I hope you check it out. It comes out June 21st. It might be my most important book yet. Okay, we have run out of time. I want to thank our guests this week. I want to thank Kim Hansen and Allison Caliendo and Jan Wagner talking about the brand new book, The Kinship Parenting Toolbox. What a great, great book that is. I also want to thank Karen Poteet of the National Foster Parent Association with this week's NFPA news and notes and sharing some information about next week's very, very exciting conference. I hope to see you there. If you are there, or you're in Pennsylvania this week, stop by my resource and book table. I'd love to meet with you. All right, we've run out of time. Another week has just flown by. We're going to be back next week with another edition of America's Foster Care Radio Show. So I'm going to end it there. All right, my friend, I will bid you cheers until next week. From all of us at the Fostering Success USA Radio Network, I hope you have a great evening and a great week ahead. You're listening to America's Foster Care Radio Program. This is Foster Talk with Dr. John.
You're listening to Foster Talk with Dr. John DeGarmo, America's only foster care radio program.